Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Would You Date a Scientist? I am joined this week by Simon Hassam Hassami. How are you doing?
I'm very, very good. Thank you very much. And you?
I'm very good. So you are Head of Data Science and AI at Seer Partners. Can you talk me kind of through your data science career? How did you get where you are now?
Exactly. Actually, my background is more like, because Seer Partner is a consulting, is a consulting company. And my background is, it was when it started, you know, my career, I was more in academic. I did a PhD in mathematics, but more in epidemiology. And after that, I decided to change, you know, path from academy to go to the private sector, working with the private sector. So the way for me was just going to consulting, working as a consultant, data science consultant. I really enjoyed because it was really, really great. I have like a lot of, you know, different projects to work with. I meet a very lovely, very high skilled people. So I learned a lot from them. And I worked more because of my background. It was in epidemiology. I worked for a pharmaceutical company for a couple of years and then switched to nonprofits. I founded my nonprofit platform. Finally, after this, you know, this social entrepreneurship, you know, journey, I decided to go back to consulting.
Amazing. Well done for doing a nonprofit. I used to work for a charity. And it balanced out my karma. So I was doing such good work, but then I could have my awful sense of humor on the other side. And
it's still something that I put it in my core of my working journey, because I think there is something important for me. And I want to, it's a data sharing, this is still in, you know, data science. It's something that I can now do. So I think it's important impact. It was important more and really impact drive me for doing that for a year and a half by my own self. So it was a great journey and I learned a lot during this year and a half. And I think there is something, the show must go on.
So. Yep. Brilliant. So you've got a PhD in mathematics, which is amazing. Do you think it's important for somebody who's getting into data science to have a master's if they're going through academia?
Master degrees. Mm. I have like my PhD is in mathematics, applied mathematics, not mathematics, because I remember my professor said if you're going to do it in mathematics, you have to be a pure mathematics. But it's not. But for me, it was like learning, you know, application of something like mathematics in the real life. It was more interesting and was why I really, you know, did this PhD. And I think mastery, yeah, because you learn differently, you know, you learn, because I would say during the master, you become more, mature about, you know, something that you want, you're more close to the market. And I think it's important, you learn, you know, if you have like, you're doing the internship, there is more credit for you to go doing internship with the, you know, different companies. So it's all about, I love your dog.
Yeah, sorry, Jimmy just came onto the screen. Hi, Jimmy.
So I think, it would be good, you know, path to go, I would say. Yeah, okay. Doing the master.
Okay, perfect. And have you come across any challenges throughout life or your career?
You know, that is, yes. I did from, you know, yeah, I think... But the challenges has come because, as I said, my background was like working with in academics. So I learned from, you know, different mindset. The people around me, it was different. And then go to the private sector is completely different. And I think each part you learn a lot, you know, you learn more skills, more, you have more experience working with the different people. I think there is always a challenge as well, because how could you adopt, you know, the adoption in this the process to learn quickly, you know, to know, you know, when now that the the timelines is different, the deadlines is coming, you know, the everything could be completely different. I think that is this challenge is helpful to, you know, to gain more skills and gain more experience. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, I had a kind of challenges like that working with different, you know, because if you're from academic, you know, what are your deadline you're working on? Actually, you become, in during your PhD, you become your project manager, you become your, you know, you're doing all this project management, I would say, preparing for your presentation, you do all, you learn all by yourself. And I would say you are kind of, you know, you're delivering something for yourself. It becomes really, really, you know, I would say selfish maybe. Yeah. But when you're going to the private, that is different. You have a client on your side. You, everything has to adapt with the, you know, queries and what they want. You have to, you know, it's kind of working with the customers. You need to understand they need, they, you know, and they bring all this in, you know, in your solutions and to bring the solution that actually answer the queries. So it's different. I think that is the challenge that you have maybe when you do your PhD, you are more concentrated on yourself and then and becomes, you know, the others, they are more, you have to put, you know, the others in the equation.
Yeah, definitely.
In the equation. Yeah. So you add the more people in the equation, so equation will be more complicated.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. So, we've got another topic to talk about as well today, haven't we? We're going to, so you're brilliantly talking about being part of the LGBTQI plus
exactly.
family. And thank you very much for talking about this. What kind of struggles have you come across being part of our family?
I think I would say now I'm really proud to be part of this family. And always, as I said, my past is completely, my lifetime past is different as well, because I have a background. My background is, you know, my family background, I'm Iranian and immigrate to France. So I see in this, in my life, I would say I see it different in this perspective of LGBTQI family. I grew. I learned more and I did grow up in this community and learn about. And I think the first things I would say is about person, myself, to accept myself as I am. And then the people, you know, that was something that maybe is struggling for a lot of people. It could be because of, you know, their background, because of their family, etc. For me, it was a struggling. I'm talking about my personal experience. So, and then, you know, love yourself. And then you want to, you know, express that to everyone that love you and the people, you know, in your circle, that you love them and you believe they love you. And afterward, you're going even further. You know, you were going to circle to go even for in your work. You want to talk. You can be, because if you are yourself, I think you are more comfortable in any environment. So for me, I think the challenge was started from myself first, and then, you know, go through, you know, kind of coming out, myself coming out, self coming out, and then coming out with your family and friends that they love you. And then, of course, the work. And I believe these challenges, there is challenge. I think it's really, really could be, you know, it depends the person, depend where you're living, depend who, you know, the people around you, all can change the people, the challenge, the people they will actually facing. But I think now I'm more positive about it. I think the society, even the society I can see in the different country, in Asia, in Middle East, the society is changing. And this changes in the good and positive way, hopefully. And I hope at work it will be more and more, you know, easy to people to come out and say, yeah, I have a, you know, I'm from the family, LGBTQI family. And I think for a new generation is more easy. I couldn't say 20 years ago, I could easily say that, you know, have this conversation with you 20 years ago. And I even like 5-6 years ago, it's changing really, really quick. And that is the good. and positive, I think. It's absolutely really, really positive. I'm impressed with the new generation, you know, I've said the young generation that they have, and I really positive. And I think
love them.
Great. I love them as well.
Gen Z, is it Gen Z? They are the best.
Yes.
So my daughter, yeah, like she's taught me so much. And her friends, her and her friends have taught me so much. So we were having a chat the other day and I mentioned the podcast and Please Would You Come On. And we talked about, you know, every time that you start a new job, you kind of have to come out again. And as you've just said, coming on the podcast, you're coming out again. Must be so difficult and tiring.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, indeed, it is, because, you know, you don't know what is, I don't know, because, yeah, every time you have to, you know, it's like all your journey that you already have, all journey you're going to review your journey again.
Yeah.
You know, and every time. And it's like you're going, it's kind of, you need to prove yourself. You know, it's coming like proving yourself and just, it could be bring some kind of, you know, difficulty sometimes. Too.
Yeah.
You don't know, because you don't know who are the audience you're talking about. You know, you started work. You need to, you know, first before going, you know, I'm from the LGBTQI family. I have a partner. I work here, you know. It's, I think it's, maybe it's personal as well, but in the first, you know, steps, it's not easy to doing it quickly. And then afterward, I think, yeah, I hope, hopefully it will be more and easy for people. And I think it's a lot of change now. And it's going to be more easy.
Yeah. So whenever I meet somebody now, I don't assume pronouns. I think a lot of people, I used to. Because I didn't know any better. And I think a lot of people still do. And please, everybody, don't assume what somebody's pronouns are. So I am Wendy, she, her, and I, they, them. If I'm talking to somebody that I don't know or talking about somebody I don't know, they are they, them, until I'm told otherwise, you know. Is that the right thing for me to be doing?
Definitely. I think definitely, and has to be, you know, kind of for us could be completely normal doing that, even email, sending email, etc.
Yes.
I try to do that as well, because when I don't know the pronouns, I just say they, you know, I use they, because it's more, you know, it's more comfortable. And then it's a bit, you know, before meeting someone, and if you can even ask the people what they think.
What are your pronouns?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That will be put the people in more comfortable, and you will be more comfortable, I think. It has to be this, you know, it has to be the conversation that for us it was completely normal. They're just like, hello, what kind, you know, how can I call you? You know, your name, first thing, I think I ask your name. So that is the part of your, you know, or identity. And I think it's better if you can ask so much, you know, even if we can understand someone is in part of the LGBTQI family or not, that could be great. You know, it makes life, how we could be, you know, easily understand each other, respect we have for each other. I can see if we could, you know, go, it would be more easy even for the people to, you know, coming out. So I would say coming, not every, you know, single time that change a career, they need to coming out and have like some kind of challenges.
Yeah. So I think there's a few things for people to consider here. So people who have got their companies, people in HR who are listening, don't assume somebody's pronouns. Ask them what their pronouns are when they're starting. Introduce them as that to their team if that's what you do. Anybody who's working with somebody new, don't assume. Don't ask them what their girlfriend or what their wife about their children, because they might not have wife, girlfriend, children. Yeah. They might, you know, different partners might not be able to have children, you know. So
that's true.
You know, let's keep those personal things out of the equation when you're at work. If people would like to tell you that, then they can tell you that. Don't be asking those questions.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, if we can, you know, when you start working, if we are interested, you know, that is some conversation that can come up naturally.
Yes, absolutely.
I try to say that, for example, I have a partner, and then if the question is about a partner, so yeah, I live with my boyfriend, etc. Yeah. It's always like, I don't go, direct to the, point.
It's nobody else's business, to be honest, that's to begin true. With, right? But I also wanted to say that when you come out at work, when you've started, it depends who you're talking to, and you want to feel safe, etc. I want people to think about that on the other side. If somebody comes out to you, so we need to not assume that people have come and had it easily. Like, people from different cultures and different backgrounds might have had a tougher journey than others. And I think that if somebody comes out to you, I'm a full ally. Like, I do the London Pride photos. I am a massive support. I went to the protests and stuff like that. I'm full ally. I don't even know what I'm doing, right? just please be supportive and don't tar everyone with the same brush, and just be aware that, if somebody's gay, bi, trans, they might have had a difficult journey, and just make their lives as easy as possible.
I agree. Yeah, that's a good advice. That's a good advice. Thank you.
So should we head back into data science?
Yeah, sure.
So what is the best piece of advice you could give somebody starting data science? So look, this podcast, as we know, is for people who want to get into data science, either pivoting from a role that they're in now or coming through academia, doing degree, master's in anything, potentially PhD. What advice would you give somebody?
I think that is the most, I would say comes with the passion, the people that have a passion. I'm sure that the passion is really in the center. Be passionate about something, you're doing. I would say the first, even kind of, just think about what's the result of something, what is the project that you're working on. It focus on it and try to understand what is the output of the project you're working on. Because I think as a data scientist, you're working, when you're going to somewhere to work, you need to think, this now data science is a tools, and they will use these tools to solve some problem. So think about the problem first. I think all the aspects of the problem, understanding, even I always said, when we are going with the different businesses, we need to understand what is the business exactly queries and needs that this solution can help. And then second, when we completely understand that, I call always business understanding or, problem understanding, have clear understanding about problem, you will think about different solution you have. For example, the machine model design, the machine learning models, or how you are going to clean or ingest your data, etc. But all this is after understanding what is, after understand of the problem clearly, and be really, really in contact with the people that you're going to solve the problem. Speak with them. That is really, really important. And learn where that is really, really for me important. As learn, because when you're doing PhD, you always go to the to the conference, etc., and you talk very at level of your PhD, and the people there, they know all the they are all in the same level as you are, even sometimes in the better level. So it's more easy for them to understand what you talk technically you're speaking about, but is not always in business point of view, is not always in our work, not like that. You need to translate or technical, aspects of your data science job to non-technical people. That is the key, I would say, after understanding the problem. Just put your at their place to understand what was their problem, and then how can I actually solve this problem? And then when I solve, how can I actually present them and learn them that problem, how might, for example, these machine learning models solve their problem. That is, for me, is really translation from technical, non-technical is the key, because the best model ever, if is not designed for, you know, is not designed for a user that understand how they can use and what is the, you know, output of these models, they will never use it.
So. Yeah, yeah. Like me and new technology. So if something's not really easy for me to use, I will never use it. So I'll buy all this new technology. Never read the RTFM or never read the fucking manual. If I can't figure it out straight away, I'll never use it.
That's true.
So you're right. People won't use it if they don't understand it.
I think that for the data science experts, is important to, you know, deliver the good message. The deliver the good message sometimes is better than the best model that you have. If you cannot exactly convince the problem owners, I would say, the problem owners, if you cannot really, you know, convince them that your solution is the best solution, because of that, in this case, they're not going to use it. They're not use your solution.
Yeah. And you need to kind of prove that you're doing the job, I suppose, don't you? So communication solving the problem, communicating that to the business on a level that they'll understand it.
Exactly. And all between these, I think, is your expertise. Everyone has their different, you know, methodology to solve something. Yeah. They have different knowledge. They have different. So that is brings more value to each one, you know, each problem solvers. Yeah. You are a good data. Why we can actually give a different, you know, different level to the different data scientists and say one data scientist is good, the other is better, etc. So I think that is something that everyone has to. It depends really, or everyone's skills and experience.
Yeah. So I've had somebody, I saw a comment on LinkedIn the other day, somebody tagged me in it actually. They are a senior data engineer and their son has been wanted to get into data science and cannot get into a company, can't get into an internship or anything like that. Now I've got a call with the dad to give them some advice. Is there anything that you can think of that can help somebody getting into data science through academia or doing boot camps or something, just get that role, get into an internship, get into a grad program?
Yes, that is a good question. But I think more and more we need to think about that. The path to the, you know, good expertise in data science, it goes as well with the data, good in data engineer, the people that they know exactly, you know, because data, for me, the data engineering is a part of data science, world. So it's not really separated. The good thing, it will be more be interested in the models that it will, you know, learning how, because they have probably expertise in data engineering, preparing data, data ingestion, or, you know, create APIs, how to connect the different databases, etc. But they need to think about how can I design first the model and start with the simple models, you know, start with the really, really simple. Sometimes the simple models, it works better than the more complicated models. Start learning about, you know, about regression, for example, starting as the regression models, work with the time series analysis, and then forecasting. And then, you know, that is the first steps to go to the models that we have, you know, I think everyone has, you had like a scientific background, they started to learn about, you know, the time series, forecasting, different regression models. So that is the, you know, basics to learn, and it's it helps you the door, you know, to open to learn more and go for more complex models. And yeah, just try to learn the simple things and talk about something that you are more, you know, comfortable. And then, you can say, okay, we need to accept that the part of data science is learning as well. If you're going recruiting someone and you know they are interested, they learning, they are smart to learn, and they the more important, they are passionate to learn data science. So I think you should open the door for these kind of talents and let them in. And learning, one part of learning in data science is, by working on the project. And that is because the science is one part of that. Don't forget that the science, data science. Science is learning always. You cannot say you are PhD, you stop learning. No. Is the first step of learning is when you finished your PhD, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I started this podcast to help me as well as a recruiter because, you know, I want to do the best that I possibly can. And I was like, how am I going to do that? So I did a course. Nope. Still, I might not get it. I don't know how to do it, but there's just so much of it. Like, talking to people, it's just so...
Yeah, it's talking with the people, with the experts. There is a lot of platform, learning platform now.
Yeah.
It's easily, you know, accessible for everyone. And one of the good things with the COVID is that we can learn from everywhere. You just take your, you know, your laptop, go to the cafe, just learn for 1 hour, learn about the, you know, the models, what kind of models, the application of the different models in the different sector. That is something that they bring actually you the idea how could use, you know, to solve different problems.
Yeah. So what's your most favorite project that you've done within data science?
That is interesting. Most favorite in data science. Apart from the, you know, the platform that I developed, it's starting for the, I don't know if I can put it as a like 100% data science project because it's a big part. It was data ingestion of the personal data, how we can gather the personal data from different sources and then share this personal data with the research institutions. That is one because it was kind of part of it. The idea it came after my PhD because I didn't have access to real life data. As I said, I work in epidemiology. For me, it was more important to understand how groups in the social context they form, in the people forming a group, how long they stay together, and this, you know, all these parameters can be impact on dynamic of the epidemic. And this at that level, I didn't have access to these, you know, these data because, like, for example, your geolocalization data. And I thought it was unfair because this kind of data is easily, you know, we can use this kind of data for, I would say, for targeted advertisement, etc. So I didn't have. So that is, I would say, why I came back to my point that I said, data engineering, you know, is a part of data science. You have to bring this data and then work on it. So for me, it was like my platform, Donné, it's one of the projects that I'm really, really, you know, proud of, the project that I did. More personal, I would say, because there is impact and something that I wanted to, you know, bring to the life. And this, I think that one of the other projects I did, it was a project I did for my in my previous work. It was the project that I used a different model to understand for the patient. It's like patient segmentation to understand the patient what they are different. And I usually put the, you know, in the category of understanding the customers. You will even put that as understanding customers or users. So how, because that is something important everyone wants in the all the pharmaceutical companies or digital health, they're going more in passion engagement. So passion engagement, it comes to know your, you know, your passion. Even if you're working, you know, you have a user, you want to know your user. That is gives you more, you know, the features that you will learn. They give more, you know, information about how you can, you know, deliver your service. Or
okay.
I think that is, we're living in the more personalized, you know, world, and everything has to be personalized. So that is the, I think that was the project that I work and I use actually different idea, and when I apply the models, it was interesting because I have business stakeholders talking with them, and I didn't have any background about, you know, what they, you know, work, and they were just, you know, it was just their job. They knew, for example, they knew the passion. They have all, you know, the different, I would say, segments of the passion they have. I said, okay, I don't want to, you know all this information. It's not my, you know, kind of, I look at it as a data scientist. I keep all the data and let the model try to define the different segments and see what is your, you know, what is the model say, and then we can compare with your segment that you have with your experience. So that was interesting because afterward, when I, you know, results, when the best part was when I show and presented the results, And the business stakeholders, you know, business experts said, oh, the model it put these people in the same, you know, this kind of the passion, this segments. That's, we know why, but we couldn't understand, you know, why they are in the same group of, they so close. But before that, they didn't, you know, it was just like, before that, it was just they have, because of their maybe experience, they could say why this kind of, you know, segment is forming. But the model actually, based on the data comes, it could be, you know, it was as intelligent as the people that had like, you know, experience like 20 years working at the, in the sector to understand. And something it was interesting, how you can combine afterward these experiences experts have and this intelligence that the model bring. And this, it will really, you know, change everything. Because I'm not thinking that, you know, this expert with 20 years, the model can do their job. No, at all. Because I come back to my point that you need to work as a data scientist with experts, business experts, that they have expertise. Because your model by own self is not going to do a lot, you know. You just combine it with this human expertise. And actually, it was one of my best experience when we could see the business expert said, ah, I know exactly why this segment happened. And it was there. They could put the label on this segment. And they said, right. Okay, now we understand the behavior of, you know, these clusters, why this cluster, you know, we have this kind of behavior in this cluster. And if it was just model, it could just put the different cluster, but afterwards it's finished. We didn't have any action to put.
Yeah.
But the good thing it was, you know, combining with expertise and experience of the human, it's make it more interesting. And I think it's one of the projects I was proud of, because I was surprised that it could be, you know, intelligence extracted from the data could be really, really be applied.
Brilliant.
In one project like that.
Brilliant. So I forgot to ask you what your favorite piece of tech was right at the beginning. Let's jump back to that. What's your favorite piece of tech?
Yeah, I'm recently really, really attracted by metaverse.
Are you?
Yeah, all this. Yeah. I didn't know if, you know, it's recently, it's not, but I didn't know it was like my cup of tea.
Right.
And then when I started to know about it, and recently I went actually as a part of with the CR partners, I had a speech in Dublin about metaverse in a Lego summit.
Okay.
And I'm not expert in metaverse. I'm not expert in Lego. And the point was, how can I actually speak about something that, you know, I'm not expert, but I just look at it, something that I said to them. So I'm look at the metaverse with my data science glasses.
Yes.
Rather than my, you know, this big metaverse or VR goggles. So for me, I think I see it metaverse really, really interesting, because it will be I think it will be really, you know, boost in terms of data collections. Yeah. We'll have a different data that we don't have now, maybe easily, you know, accessible. And that will really change the models that, for example, that about this customer segmentation, mm-hmm. about user segmentation, that the models that I said, that could change completely. And we can bring more and more personalized product and services.
Yep.
And I think all the tech comes with, you know, the metaverse, and, you know, all it is interesting to, as a data scientist, look at that and say, what could be a future of data science?
Yeah.
Combined with metaverse, you know?
Okay, that's really interesting, right? Didn't plan this at all. So I do Twitter spaces with the guys at Tech UK, Sham and Thames. I'll tag you all in the show notes. And they've got a partner called MetaVisionaries, right? So I go on there to support the job side of things, say any jobs that I've got, if there's any advice I can give to people on there, that I do that. So MetaVisionaries, I'll tag them as well. They are like an education for everybody. So they've got schools in the UK, they've got people in Africa, they've got disabled people, blind people, people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, who can go and study at their Meta University, right? It's all super interesting, but I just don't get it. Right? So Sham said to me, is anybody hiring people to like code in the metaverse, or anybody like wanting your company, for example, are they hiring to, so they can be in the metaverse? So I spoke to a few of my data science contacts. Majority of them were, had been on the podcast, and there was a big, we're going right down a rabbit hole here. There was a big difference in opinions on it. So the first person was like, stay away from it. No, it's all a con. I was like, is it? Isn't that what old people were saying when the internet came along?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and another example, it would be like TV 3D. Someone asked me, do you think that interest for, you know, metaverse is not like something happened for 3D TVs?
Yeah.
But I don't think it will be like that. We know more and more. I think it's become like, you know, it's become our smartphones. How could you, you know, just imagine you're not with your smartphone for an hour? I know I'm addicted.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
I cannot. Everything is in my smartphone. I can
exactly.
If I don't have my smartphone, it's part of my intelligence is not with me.
Right. And who would have thought that all our stuff would be in the cloud? Right. So. And someone said that it really interests them, but they can't see the difference between metaverse and VR.
Yeah.
Which I kind of understand what they're saying. I don't either. Someone else was like, blockchain is just a big old spreadsheet.
I would say from my understanding, I'm not, as I said, I'm not expert in metaverse, but I'm just passionate and interested in data point of view.
Yeah.
But you know, the metaverse is like, you know, it's immersive, interactive, you know, environment.
Right. So
generated by computers. So and then it can support as well, like as you said, blockchain. It's based on like, as like a blockchain technology, and this actually is something that will help more in economic point of view. It will boost our economy probably, and we're going to have like more virtual like products that already we can see some you know, fashion and looks companies is starting to have.
Yeah,
they started. And it was like in gaming sector, it was already, you know, using the VR and going there. And now we're actually using that for more, I would say, the exciting experience. You can have, for example, in my company, we have already the office, in virtual office. You can go and do your workshop there. But imagine your workshop that you are in your place. You are, you know, you feel like comfortable in your office, but in the same time, you have experience, you know, have interaction with your colleagues.
That is
not
okay,
like
so I've worked it out. From you saying that, I've worked it out. So VR is having the virtual reality, like a computer game, and the metaverse is having it with somebody else. So it's like web one, when all you could do was get information, and then web two was when you could interact with other people. So VR is like web one, and web three is like web two.
I think, I don't know which one is, but I think they can't like kind of, you know, one including the others, and they are like really merged.
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, virtual reality is part of metaverse, and
yes,
metaverse is, you know, part.
Yes.
I think they are, we should like, you know, consider them like that.
You can have them both separately as well, right? So you can have a computer game where you're doing VR and be offline, and you
exactly.
can also access the metaverse via your computer. So
exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
And
I understand it.
I see metaverse more, you know, as I said, the platform environment more, I would say, complex.
Yes.
And this actually, it can have a different plugin on it, imagine. And VR, it would be one of these plugins you can put it in, you can use it outside in different, like, you know, yeah. I see it as a platform. It actually, you know, host a different technology, probably.
Yeah. And a lot of people are saying, like, that there's criminals on. I mean, there's criminals everywhere. Criminals are using the internet, like, all the time.
That's
right?
True.
So
yeah, that interesting things, because when I went to this legal summit, for me, I had a lot of legal questions. Mm-hmm. And I went there to actually just raise these legal questions with these, all the, you know, the experts and leader of the legal sector in Dublin. And for me, it's a lot of challenges, but we need to remember that it's every technology comes with some challenges that mm-hmm. Could be like legal challenges, could be, but we need to be prepared for use it. You know, we know now, even with the already, you know, the user behavior in the internet, you know, in Twitter, how many people that they said, you know, they won't just go out of Twitter, or, you know, it's at some platforms that they don't feel like, you know, comfortable to be, or we see that is the technology, they are the good technology. We can use it as a, you know, in a good way, but of course always we will face with different challenges, but we need to be prepared. Just be prepared. Just don't be fair, you know, don't be fair of, you know, have like, oh my God, we metaverse coming and what will happen, everyone, you know. Yeah, we already had a lot of, you know, bad experience. People had some bad experience. I remember that BBC reportage that they were actually talking about one of the journalists, posing herself as a 13-year-old in a metaverse, and she actually had a very bad experience about like different kind of racism souls, it could be, you know, it's sad, mm-hmm. but we need to be prepared. If we have a good this infrastructure, if they are completely, I would say, if they are, we have a good support, legal support, you have a good technical support, mm-hmm. for, you know, for clean this infrastructure or in the platform quickly from all these, you know, bad behaviors, that of course it will be.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the metaverse isn't the dark web. Let's separate those
exactly
from the beginning. And look, you don't know how to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not have laws, but you don't know how to run something. I know this isn't what I'm trying to say. You don't know something is going to happen until it happens, and then how to sort it out. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's, you know, before RGDPR, we didn't, you know, the data protection, or the UK data protection. Before, you know, before, we didn't know that at this level, we will have, you know, this protection. We need to put this protection at this level. The personal data, every site, you have to say, okay, I'm okay, I'm not okay for that, how they will use your data. And then, so that is, I think we learned, because before that, we didn't know, because I think it would be the same with metaverse. And I think even, you know, or in legal point of view, we need to have the structure that will help us, for example, for new in the metaverse, what kind of new data we will have. We will have our interaction with the others. That is the data, or person, could be a personal data. We can actually capture your face reaction. We can your body's move, etc. That is a part of your personal data.
Yeah, of course, you could,
if,
like,
we can capture it. So
your breathing, your, like, how you're. Hair flow,
exactly.
Like, all of it. Background is, you know.
GDPR. I said RGDPR. GDPR. GDPR is, you know, it's covering all these issues. I don't know yet. I'm not, you know, if, for example,
your
posture, you know,
your pets.
Exactly. If it's a part of exactly.
What kind of art you've got on your walls.
That's true.
Okay. So that's really interesting. I'm so glad we had that conversation. There are so many more questions I want to ask you. Maybe you can come back and do a part two podcast.
Of course.
But I do need to wrap up now. So I'm going to ask the weird question. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Speaking of that kind of thing. Do you think that one of the millionaires or billionaires that we've got in this world could build a super evil supervillain? Blah, blah, blah. Do you think that that's happening? How are we going to stop them? And what punishment should they get?
So can you explain more about
Okay, this? So you can take this in any way you want. So I used to have a cardboard cutout of Paul Rudd. He's in my office. And I was like, how can I make a question out of Paul Rudd? And I thought, okay, so let's think about Ant-Man, Marvel. You know, you've got villains on Marvel. What would happen if there were no Avengers or no Ant-Man or no Spider-Man? How are we going to stop that supervillain? So that's where it came from. But a lot of people were thinking like they're already doing it with marketing and ads and data and stuff like that. So take it however you want.
I would think learning, education, educating people and learning. And it's something that, you know, when it was the same because we said, oh, yeah, that's a big, you know, they're coming to eat our data. So, yes, of course, if we're not, you know, knowing how we protect our data, now we have, you know, structure that help us to protect our data. Just be aware of how you can protect your data, be aware. So that for me, for example, if you're protecting your personal data, you don't letting anyone to use benefit of without asking you any permission. So I think just we need to educate people. We need to educate ourselves. And education for me equally the key to, you know, because always we will think someone will do that. But no, education starts with each of us. So we start first. We need to start to educate ourselves and the people around us, if it's possible. And then it's like that. I think education is the key, obviously.
Love that. I love it. Perfect answer. Okay, before we go, Sam, is there anything that you would like to plug or talk about or discuss that we haven't touched on already?
No, I think but I think this June is a Pride month.
June is Pride month, yes.
I think it will be interesting trying to understand and learn the story of the, you know, the LGBTQI, and try, even if you don't have anyone in your family, just think about it, you know, think about what, because I think it's important to think about, you know, we are all different, and or I would say our difference is part of, you know, that is something give us more strength and give us our society. Just take this as a, you know, that's an opportunity to having, you know, to knowing different people, to understand the different people.
Celebrate it.
That is the, in this month, I think maybe we can do it every single day, but this month maybe it's occasion to just think about it.
Yeah.
We probably will be parents of the, you know, the child that, and we need to prepare for all this to you know, understand better the different differences that we have in each human. I think that it will be, as in my point of view, it will be really, really important in this month to think about it.
Perfect. Thank
and
you.
Love each other. Yeah.
I think I'm doing for
do you know universe for Miss Universe?
I would like world peace.
And love each other. But love.
Yeah.
Try to love each other. That is, it's not easy to loving always, you know, like, but trying.
Definitely don't hate.
Don't hate.
And as you said, we need to be doing it every day. And companies don't just change your icon to a rainbow and think that that's all you need to do.
Don't put everything in the paper. Just everything in the paper. Just let's really change the, you know, practical, bring the practical change, bring, you know, call different culture, bring the culture that people they can easily talk about, you know, themselves.
Yeah, that Pride started as riots. We don't want them to riot in your company. Oh, bless you. Look, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Lovely. Thank you very much for having me.